My guest today is William Chafe, the Mary Alice Baldwin Professor of History Emeritus at Duke University. He's the author of 13 books, including Civilities and Civil Rights, which dealt with the Greensboro sit-ins and other aspects of the civil rights movement of the 1960s and 70s. His new book, Bill and Hillary, The Politics of the Personal, concerns the famous power couple. In fact, he's speaking here at UK at the invitation of the Wendell H. Ford Public Policy Research Center. Mr. Chafe, welcome.
Thank you so much.
All right. So what did your research reveal about Bill and Hillary Clinton?
Well, they are people who cannot be understood without each other being part of the equation. The personal chemistry between them is essential to both understanding and appreciating how they came to power, what they did with that power, and how they survived in power. And the bottom line would be that Bill Clinton would never be president were it not for Hillary Clinton, who rescued him repeatedly. And Hillary would never have had the impact she had on national politics or local politics in Arkansas without the leverage she secured by virtue of having saved Bill Clinton repeatedly.
So it's the yin and the yang, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very complementary. They are not identical in any respect. They're very different from each other. Bill is outgoing, cares about people, is gregarious, is very emotional. Hillary is very focused, very structured, very disciplined, very on target. She used to say to Bill, "Get to the point, damn it, Bill, get to the point." And I think that that together made it possible for them to function very well as a political couple, but it also created certain problems.
Are there other couples that you could sort of point to as an example, or is this such a unique pairing that's what fascinates us to this day?
Well, to some extent, they're unique. The couple that is most similar to them would be Franklin and Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt. The difference is that Franklin and Eleanor, while they were political partners, were really not personal partners for a long time. As after Eleanor discovered that Franklin had been having a love affair with her private secretary in 1919, they really stopped having a marital relationship. On the other hand, she became a political surrogate for Franklin after he had polio, and she played a very significant political role in arguing for more left-of-center progressive ideas during the New Deal. But they were very different in the way in which they functioned, much less personal, much less intimate, much less interactive than Bill and Hillary were, because the bottom line is that Hillary essentially rescued Bill repeatedly.
Obviously, one of the incidents we might be talking about here is the Lewinsky scandal. So why did the Clintons not divorce because of that?
Well, this goes back a long, 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 long way. So we can't really get to Lewinsky without talking about the origins of the relationship. And Hillary was all along aware of the fact that Bill was a philanderer, that he had temptations in his way, that he oftentimes succumbed to those temptations. But she made a decision early on. She was very ambitious politically, as was he. But this was in the early 1970s. And at that point in time, even though feminism had begun to make a major impact, it was not at all clear that she could go it alone and become the first female president or a major political figure. And she made a very significant wager, essentially, very calculated, that together they could achieve their respective goals more effectively than either of them could individually. They had both worked in the McGovern campaign in Texas in 1972. Betsy Wright, one of her best friends, thought that Hillary was going to be the first woman president based on that experience because she was so talented. Bill was very effective at that point also. And then he went back to Arkansas and he ran for office the office of congressman. Hillary came and joined him in that campaign, particularly after she discovered that he was having a series of affairs with people on the staff, and she wanted to keep her eye on him. He lost that particular election, but he didn't lose by much, and he'd come from the person he was opposing had won by 72% the previous election. And then he ran for attorney general in Arkansas, which he had always planned to do, and that was very successful. Then he ran for governor. She was very instrumental in making it possible for him to be successful. Now, the first time she really rescued him was when he lost his reelection bid for governor in 1980. And he lost it because he was so disorganized, so without focus, and because he made a number of political mistakes. And he was disconsolate. He was depressed. He was profoundly out of sorts. And Hillary essentially said, look, Bill, we need to get organized. We need to get focused. I want to be able to give purpose to your campaign. She went out and recruited her old friend Betsy Wright to become Bill's chief of staff. She went out and recruited Dick Morris, a superb politico from New York. And she basically structured the campaign and ran it so that it had focus, it had coherence, and it had an agenda. And so she made it possible for him to become a reelected governor of Arkansas in 1982. And from that point forward, she really played a pivotal role in that administration. She became the most important person in the administration. She led the Education Task Force, which brought huge reforms to Arkansas. And she was instrumental, of course, most importantly, when he ran for president in 1992, when he was about ready to plummet through the floor because of the Jennifer Flowers accusations that she claimed that she had a 12-year affair with Bill Clinton. It probably was nowhere near that long, but certainly it was an affair. And Hillary went on television with him on 60 Minutes, when everyone will recognize and remember that moment, when she said, look, we've had problems in our marriage, but we love each other. We believe in each other. We're going to grow old together. We are going to be a couple for a long time. And suddenly, because of that, he recovered in the polls. He came in second in New Hampshire, and he went on to win the nomination. And that, in turn, gave her the kind of power and political clout in the administration that she used very, 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 very much to her advantage.
So we call this guy the comeback. So we call this guy the comeback kid, and really, it's Hillary Clinton who made him the comeback kid.
She made him the comeback kid. She saved his life at least three times politically, and of course, the last time she saved his life was when the Lewinsky scandal did take place. When, in fact, if she had in any way not stood by him, he would have been out of office. He would have been subject to calls for his resignation from both Democrats and Republicans in the Senate, and he couldn't have survived. And she essentially made it possible for him to survive because she stood by him.
Now, of course, Bill Clinton successfully campaigned for Barack Obama for his second term. Had to be some mixed feelings there from Hillary watching Bill stump for the man who denied her the Democratic nomination 4 years ago.
Well, I think what Bill was doing was two things. He was protecting his own reputation as being a very effective president. But the most important thing he was doing was paving the way for Hillary to be nominated in 2016, because her chances of being nominated and elected in 2016 are immeasurably better if she's succeeding a Democrat who's had a successful second term than if she were opposing a Republican who'd had a very successful first term, particularly given the fact that the economy is coming back and will come back no matter who's president. And this way, Democrats get credit for that. Otherwise, Romney would get credit for it, and she'd have a hard time getting elected. So what Bill was doing was not only working for Obama, he was working for Hillary.
And she obviously is going to step down quite soon as Secretary of State. What does she do in the interim? Does she just start day one plotting for 2016?
She stays in the public eye. She does her own work with the Global Educational Initiative of the Clinton Foundation. And she becomes more and more a public figure, speaking out on major issues. And 2 years before 2016, she starts running for office, and she hopefully inherits the Obama ground game and succeeds in both winning the Democratic nomination but then going on and winning the presidency.
All right, let's talk distance or lack thereof now with their coupling, because she's not going to be needed as much on the world stage. Do they peacefully coexist in the same house? I mean, how does this work?
I think that they've had a very interesting relationship for the last 10 years, 12 years. The bottom line is that they have only spent 2-3 days a month together. I'm sure they do talk on the phone every day. I think they're still very close intellectually and politically. I think that they will continue that kind of relationship in which they will retain separate homes, hers in Washington, his in New York. They will see each other more often now that she's not traveling around the world every week. But I would think, frankly, this would be my prediction, that if she were elected president, that he would only spend part of his time at the White House and the rest of his time in New York, and that they would continue to be a kind of political and intellectual couple without necessarily living together.
And he would be the first gentleman, correct?
He would, and he would be effective at that because he's so charming.
Now, a couple more questions. What made you want to write this book?
I wanted to write this book because I had come very much to the conclusion that what happens in a person's private life is very much involved in what they do with their public lives. I wrote a book called Private Lives, Public Consequences, which looked at 8 different sets of political leaders and how much their personalities affected their political activities. I certainly discovered this by writing about Franklin and Eleanor and then about Bill and Hillary. And it seemed to me that we had to really come to grips with the fact that we are not schizoid personalities. We may be schizoid personalities, but there's a relationship between our private side and our public side. And this goes back to the very fundamental theme of the feminist movement. The personal is political, and the political is personal. And so the political chemistry between people is going to have a dramatic impact on the way in which they function as a unit and the way in which they behave in public life.
What is the great takeaway from this new book of yours?
I think the great takeaway is that people's lives are complicated. They're deeply individual. Every marriage is unique. And if you want to understand how and why people come to the dynamic that shapes their relationship and their public activities, you have to look at it very carefully and see just how that chemistry works.
And your remarks to the audience today at the University of Kentucky, pretty much what we just talked about here?
For the most part, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about the degree to which the strangeness of each of their individual backgrounds helped contribute to the uniqueness of their personalities.
Such as? I got to pin you down on that.
Okay. Well, you know, Bill grew up in a very dysfunctional family. His mother, Virginia, spent 90 minutes every morning putting on makeup. And she says in her autobiography, she did that in order to hide who she really was from other people's understanding. She loved her father. She disliked her mother. She decided early on to only look on the bright side of things. She went off to school and met a guy named Bill Blythe, who told her he was a salesman. He never was a salesman. Who then went off to fight in the army. He never told her he'd been married 3 times before or had had children. He died shortly after he came back from the war in Italy, but after she was pregnant. She then went off to school again, leaving her young son Billy with her parents because she couldn't stand to live with her parents. And she met another man. He too had been married 4 times before, was guilty of spouse abuse. She didn't know any of this. They got married. He became an alcoholic. He beat her up. And Billy was the person who rescued his mother from being beaten. One of the things you learn about the children of alcoholics and people in that circumstance is that they see themselves as having a special responsibility to be the family hero, to rescue things, to make things right. And that's what Billy set out to do. He became the leader of his class. He decided early on he was going to be the person who made it big time and would bring honor to the family, and he did. And he early on decided he was going to be president and start off by being attorney general, then governor. So he was pretty messed up, came out of a pretty messed up family, but so did she, and although she did not acknowledge it in her memoirs the way he does in his. Her mother was born to a 15-year-old mother and a 17-year-old father. When she was 8 years old, she was put on a train with her 3-year-old brother from Los Angeles back to Chicago by herself, to live with her grandparents who mistreated her. She got a job working for a lace curtain manufacturer, and that's the man she married. He was not physically abusive, but he was verbally abusive. He mistreated her. But she decided that it was more important to keep the family together for the sake of the children than to pursue a divorce. He would dismiss her in arguments. If a child left the top of the toothpaste tube off in the bathroom, he would discover it and throw it out the window into the snow and make the child go find it. This was not a nice man. And yet, the fundamental lesson Hillary learned was from her mother, which is you don't ever sacrifice your children. You stay together. Divorce is something we don't consider. Her mother made her into her mother was responsible for her becoming an activist in the Methodist Youth Fellowship. Her mother believed in the social gospel. Hillary followed her mother's example, became a leader at Wellesley College, became a leader at Yale Law School, was a pioneer in many respects in areas that women had not been involved in before. And so when Hillary met Bill, you've got these two people with very different backgrounds, but each of them somewhat shaped by how remarkable and unique were those childhoods. And Bill had never been able to develop a really long-term relationship. Hillary was intrigued by his charisma and by his charm and by his intelligence. And they eventually fell in love and became a couple.
And so their strengths complement each other's weaknesses.
Yes, exactly. Precisely.
And that's why it works to this day.
That's why it works to this day, although I do think that the Lewinsky scandal helped liberate Hillary to become her own person once again.
Yeah, because you're talking about negotiating a grand bargain, if you will. She holds the chips.
She holds the chips. He's totally afraid of her being alienated, and she saves him one last time.
My guest today has been William Chafe, the Mary Alice Baldwin Professor of History Emeritus at Duke University. He's the author of 13 books, including Bill and Hillary, The Politics of the Personal. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks very much for being. I'd love to be here.